Hey folks, this is the Society of Illustrators podcast. I am Santosh Uman, your host for today, and also the president of the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles. We have another great podcast with Nyla Magruder, who's a graphic novelist, children's book author, and storyboard artist. This one has some great information about being an artist and chasing your dreams. The word you'll hear a lot of is stamina. And Nyla talks about her successes and challenges that she overcame on her journey to becoming a full-time artist. What was the thing that kept her going? Why the CTN workshop she went to made a big impact on her? And how she pitched her books on, or her children's book on the pitch parties on Twitter, sticking to a schedule, why it's important to plan your meals and be consistent. It's all on this episode. If you want to be a full-time artist, hear what Nyla Magruder has to say and apply some of this to your life. Hope you enjoy. Hey folks, this is the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles podcast. My name is Santosh Uman, and I am here with Nyla Magruder. How you doing, Nyla?
I'm good.
Excited to have you here. One of the awesome things I found out when I was doing some work on your background, I've known about your comic, and I've known about you doing storyboards, but you had one a guest stint on a Marvel comic.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get into that a little bit later, but that was one little thing that I just had found out yesterday, or I think a couple days ago, and I was like, wow, I did not know this. But how did this all begin in terms of your foray into art? Tell me your story.
Oh, goodness.
Comics, children's books, graphic novels. I mean, you've done it all, and of course you won the Dwayne McDuffie Award in 2015.
Yes. Well, it all started when I was a wee child. I've loved drawing since I was a little kid. But I guess, as you know, growing up, it always felt like a pipe dream for me. I never really imagined myself becoming an artist because, especially where I was from, I'm from Maryland, there weren't really any clear pathways to a career in art. You know, the typical mindset was of the starving artist. And so I think the turning point for me was in middle school, which is I was 12 or 13, and that's when The Lion King came out. And we were watching the VHS of Aladdin in art class one day, and before the movie, there was a preview of The Lion King, and it was just pencil tests. And watching those tests, I thought to myself, that's it. That's what I want to do. But I really, you know, animation, I really didn't understand it as an industry. I didn't understand how you become an animator. But it's something that kind of, like, refueled my love of drawing and of art. So I always drew, didn't really take art classes in high school, didn't really join art club. And then in my junior year, I found out that you could actually study animation in college. And so that, like, before then, I think I was just considering, you know, going into accounting or music, which was my other passion.
Accounting,
yes. Yeah, or computer science. Something practical, you know, that people actually can live on.
The word practical always comes into play when you're in your junior or sophomore year.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and this prompted a lot of fights between me and my mom, who wanted me to go the practical route. And junior year, all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, how about I major in art? And so, like, to fast forward a bit, it was kind of a back and forth journey for me because art school was so expensive and there weren't really any animation programs near where I lived. And so I went to...
Where were you planning, or where were you going to college at the time?
I first started at Hood College, which is in Maryland, and that's a liberal arts private school. And I majored in communications there. So for a while, I was actually a journalist.
So you were writing... back then.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I was writing back then, and actually I've always written. I've always been involved in newspaper club in school, and so writing, art, and music were kind of the three things that I did coming up through school. And so after I graduated, I was a little older. I knew a little more about the industry then, and so I could reevaluate, you know, okay, what can I do to get into the animation industry? Is this like a viable option for me? And so one of my art professors at Hood College helped me put together a new portfolio and apply to different animation programs, and I got into Ringling College of Art and Design.
Great school.
Yeah, very good school. I studied computer animation there. They have a great computer animation program. Graduated, couldn't find a job because it was 2010, the market tanked, and I was still living in Maryland, so I really had no prospects. And around that time, you know, I was unemployed off and on. I was very bored. I was very desperate. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And so I just kind of started trying everything. So I had a few comic ideas that I'd been sitting on for years and years, and so I decided to try out a webcomic. A friend of mine told me about the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, so I joined that and started learning about writing children's books. And I was still trying to figure out how to break into animation. So in 2011, I packed up everything and moved to Los Angeles and was lucky enough to find a job within 4 months at a small studio called Soapbox Films, and I stayed there for 3 years and eventually jumped to DreamWorks, and then now I'm at Disney. And so while all that was going on, I had published a webcomic by then, and so I was still updating that. And I was still sending out, like, picture book submissions to agents. And so all kind of around the same time, my webcomic MFK won the Dwayne McDuffie Award. And then I got an agent, and they sold my first picture book. And so that's kind of what started the snowball into now.
So in 2011, you came without a job prospect, or I mean, you knew there were probably jobs there, but it was like, okay, I'm going for it.
Right.
Is that was kind of your mindset at that point, right?
Yeah, pretty much, because I'd kind of realized by then that a lot of studios out here aren't going to consider you unless you have a local address. Job opportunities just turn over so quickly, and most places are very small, and they're not going to fly you out here for what will probably end up being like a 3-month contract. So, you know, I decided, I was thinking about just becoming a full-time freelance artist, and I was like really full steam ahead on that idea. And then during the summer, I kind of hit brakes and thought to myself, you know, I really haven't given animation a full try yet. You know, I'm kind of giving up a little early. And so I decided, why not just go out to Los Angeles, see how it goes. And so like that first year, I guess, was really, really touch and go. It felt like every few weeks I was at the end of my rope, and you know, like just there were no jobs. I was running out of money, and it seemed like every time I was about to just throw in the towel and move back to Maryland, something would happen that would get me through the next few weeks. And so I found a job, and that got me a little further. And then, you know, freelance checks would come in, and that would get me the next step. And so, yeah, so I kind of accidentally ended up staying in LA for the last 5 years.
Hmm. And at the early point, was your mom supportive? Was she... I mean, obviously, it was probably a challenge because of the, you know, freelance is never an easy
thing,
especially when you're starting off.
I think my mom was supportive in that, you know, she wanted me to follow my passion, but at the same time, you know, my mom always says this, she was born in 42. And so she comes from a time when women, especially black women, only had three options: housekeeping, teaching, or nursing. And she picked teaching. And so she'll tell me, you know, I'm proud of you, but I have no idea what you're going through. I didn't have options. And so, you know, she would give me whatever advice she could, but, and, you know, I always knew if worse comes to worse, I could always go back home. And, you know, I knew she would support me in any decision I made, but for the most part, it was, you know, just me trying to figure out, like, how does this work? How does this lifestyle work, you know, being an artist?
What was the thing that kept you here or kept you going in terms of your, that fire?
When I first moved out here, I attended a CTN Animation Expo for the first time. And there was a workshop with a few different women in animation. Brenda Chapman was in it. Kathy Altieri was there. And something Kathy Altieri said, she said, it's about stamina. Being in the animation industry is about stamina. And so whenever I felt like I couldn't do anymore, I would think to myself, you have to have stamina. And that would keep me going. You know, that thought of, it's really about the last person standing. You just have to hold on for as long as you can until something happens. And so, you know, my constant thought was just hold on a little bit longer.
And those are powerful words from two powerful women.
Yeah.
So MFK, you've been doing it for 5 years and you're continuing to do it.
Yes.
What drives you to tell this story? And do you have an end?
I do have an end. It's way far off. I first came up with the story, gosh, like, what's the math? I guess it was 12 or 13 years ago. And it came from noticing at the time, I was reading a lot of shonen manga. I really liked action comics, and I was kind of disappointed in the way that female characters were treated in action comics. And I was also disappointed in the lack of black characters in fantasy. And so, you know, I was reading these stories and I was thinking to myself, I want to read something like this that's about a girl. And that was the inspiration for MFK. And so a big reason that I keep writing it is because we're here now 12 or 13 years later, and, you know, female roles in action still kind of suck, and there still aren't a lot of black characters in fantasy. And so aside from just really loving the story and having, you know, spent over a decade on it, I think to myself, I want, you know, little girls like me to be able to read a story where they see themselves as the hero.
That's great. And now you have a publisher.
Yes.
I hear. How did that come into play?
First of all, I got an agent, and actually I got two agents. And this happened because of my picture book. An agent made me an offer based on my picture book, and, you know, I told her, well, these are some of the other projects I'm working on, and also just to let you know, I have this webcomic. And so the agent, her name is Michelle, told me, well, actually my boss has a very extensive comic background. Would you like me to show it to her? And so I said, sure. And so that agent, whose name is Jean, said, hey, we should try selling this. And we did. And Inside Editions made an offer for it. And it turned out, I didn't know this at the time, but it turned out that they were starting comics in print. Inside Editions has history with publishing mostly art books and, like, specialty books. And so comics is kind of new for them. Like, they've always done licensed books for Marvel and DC. but this is their first foray into publishing their own comics, and so MFK is going to be part of their first line.
That's fantastic. So you're basically the start of all of their graphic novels.
Yes.
That's pretty empowering.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
So I read some articles that I think I've found as links to your website that mentioned that you had pretty much pitched to agents and you had kind of given up, but then you had found Twitter.
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah. I was already on Twitter. I'm addicted to Twitter.
But you found this pitch thing on Twitter.
Yes, I found out about pitch parties. So on Twitter, and there are several of these now, basically a pitch party is, it's one day, they'll create a hashtag. In this case, it was hashtag PitMad. And so you can pitch whatever manuscript you have within 140 characters, including this hashtag, and agents and editors will scroll through the hashtag, and if they see a pitch that they like, they'll fave it, and that's basically an invitation for you
to
query them. It's not a substitute for email querying. I was doing that already. In fact, pitch parties are ideal for people who are already querying agents. Mm. And so because I was already sending the manuscript out, I figured, well, might as well participate in this. And that's how I found Michelle.
And she was your first agent?
She's my first agent.
Okay.
Yes.
And you said you have two agents?
Yes. They work at the same agency. But okay. They both, like, Michelle covers my children's books, picture books, novels. Jean covers my comics.
So that's interesting because there's agents that are literary agents that cover picture books, graphic novels, and illustration. And then there's, you know, media agents. But then in the agency that you're with, they've split it up.
Well, typically an agent kind of has a license to create their own list, whatever they're interested in reading. And so Michelle just wants to focus on children's books, and that's why I went with her. I went with her because I intend to write children's books, and you know, I kind of had no plan to write adult, and so, you know, her preferences were in line with mine. I didn't know that Jean, who's the owner of the agency, had a comic background, and so that was kind of a serendipitous thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because it's her specialty,
yeah,
that's probably why she wanted to shepherd the project, because she knows the comic industry.
Exactly. So, and she has a lot of connections.
So, picture books, is that a field that you've always had a love for besides comics and animation? Is that?
Now, I would say no, but in middle school, I did, like, make my own picture book for a class once, and I still have it. And so I think it's something that's always been in the back of my mind, and I've always, like, really wanted to publish a book, but I, you know, growing up, I was never specific on what kind of book that had to be. I wasn't thinking about picture books when I graduated, but a friend of mine emailed me, and she had been looking through my online portfolio, and she said, "Hey, you should join SCBWI, which is the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, because you have really beautiful art, and I think you could make some really awesome picture books." And so I didn't really start thinking about it seriously until then, because I really didn't know how to write a picture book. And that just learning how to write picture books was kind of a journey.
Yeah, and I met you at SCBWI, I think, at an event originally.
Yeah.
So how did you go about learning about writing a children's book? Was it SCBWI books that you read?
SCBWI was kind of instrumental because I really didn't know anything about writing children's books in general at that point. And so, like, I'd go to the regional conferences. I'd go to any events that that they offered. A regional conference actually was my first connection to forming a critique group. And, you know, when I moved out here, I continued going to the events, and their resources kind of helped me figure out, like, what information I didn't have and what I needed to learn. And so from there, I started reading more picture books. I'd go onto their forums and get feedback on my manuscripts. I joined a couple of different critique groups. And so that's all been very instrumental in just learning the craft of picture book writing, because it's very different from anything else.
So you were sharing, and you were open to putting your work out there to have others take a look at it.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately how your book, How to Find a Fox, came out.
Right. In fact, that manuscript I had actually shelved because I couldn't get it to work. It was just so boring, and I knew it wasn't a good book. I'd first, like, posted it to the forum, and somebody had said, you should try writing this in second person, which was an interesting choice because second person isn't really, it's not a popular format for any sort of writing. And so I was like, sure, I was willing to try it. And it was fun, you know, it was a fun voice, but the story really wasn't sitting well with me. And so I actually just put it away and kind of gave up on it. And then ended up coming back to it months later because I had read a blog post. It was an interview with an agent, and he had mentioned the importance of conflict. And this is very obvious, like, a story needs conflict, but it suddenly hit me that, oh, that's what's wrong with my story. It doesn't have that. And so I went back and I kind of stripped it down and said to myself, okay, what is this really about? And it was about the girl and the fox and the tension between them. And so I tried again, and this time I focused on just that one line of thought, just the girl and the fox. And it was, I don't know, it was like I struck gold. Like,
it just came together.
Yeah, like suddenly everything made sense, like these fun possibilities, like, for imagery were coming to mind, and it just took off.
Now, do you plan to continue with those adventures in terms of the girl and the fox, or do you want to come to another story? Is that something
that I have other things I am working on. My agent and I have discussed writing more in that world, but I haven't put pen to paper yet.
So you're also storyboarding, and you're storyboarding on the new Tangled series. We're allowed to say that, I think, right?
Yes.
So that's been sort of, I mean, animation has been your kind of pursuit. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing it, and then you're doing your webcomic and your children's book. How is all of that interconnected? Because it's sequential art with your comics and then, you know, your storyboarding. How is that interconnected, and how has each medium sort of helped each other in terms of maybe your MFK helping the work that you're doing in Tangled, or the work that you're doing in Tangled now is becoming more cinematic, does that make sense?
Yeah. I actually made the leap and started my webcomic kind of, Not just as a reason for me to keep drawing, but, you know, a method of working on my craft as well, of learning how to tell a story visually.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, working on comics has definitely informed my storyboarding, and storyboarding has definitely informed everything else. There's a lot that we learn with regards to cinematography that translates into comics and picture books, just how to be clear, how to best transition from shot to shot, from scene to scene. And also, I think, you know, storyboarding and both drawing a comic have helped me get a lot faster.
Yeah, which, mileage.
Yeah,
plenty definitely. Of mileage, I'm sure, on storyboarding, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's super when you're working on so much at the same time. Like, speed is super important.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do a certain amount of panels per week or script pages, and that's a lot of... I'm sure it takes a toll.
Oh, yeah. And my goal is always to get more proficient so that, you know, my best drawings now I can do in half the time so that, you know, I can put out a product fast, but it still looks good. You know, it doesn't look rushed.
And are they using Photoshop or Storyboard Pro or
Storyboard Pro.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in the craft that you're working at in terms of your comic and your children's books, are you doing digital? Do you feel that's the easiest way or the most comfortable that you're with? Or
It's the most comfortable I'm with. It's also the fastest. Like, I'd love to work traditionally because that's my background. When I first started doing comics, I would ink them traditionally. I love watercolor and gouache, but it's just a little more time consuming and also a little more space consuming.
Yeah.
So with digital, at least, I just need my computer.
So when did this stint writing for Marvel happen?
That happened earlier this year. I guess they emailed around April. It turned out, I didn't know this, but it turned out that one of their assistant editors was following me on Twitter. And so she emailed my agent and had this pitch for a comic about Tippy Toe Squirrel from Squirrel Girl and Rocket Raccoon. And she said, "Do you think Nala would be interested in this?" And my agent forwarded me the email, and I screamed in my room for about 5 minutes. And
Squirrel Girl is awesome.
Yeah. And so, yeah, of course I took it. And yeah, that's how that happened.
And so this was, you said, about a year ago?
April, I think. So it's... Yeah, somewhere this year.
That's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, is that something you would like to entertain more of, working in comics and maybe working for Marvel or DC? Or do you feel like, oh, you know what, that was a fun experience, I'm going to continue on my path?
I had a lot of fun working with Kathleen, my editor there, and the process was very interesting, but it was also really cool. It was really great to, it was my first time, like, as the writer on a collaborative project, and so it was really great to watch it all come together. You know, everybody had their roles. I would love to do it again if the right story comes up, and at this point, I don't have any ideas for what I'd want to write, but, you know, I'm keeping the door open. I'd love to do it again.
And did you get into the technique that they use as far as the Marvel way to write, or did they sort of, you know, you turn in a summary and that was how it works? Or, I mean, how did it work, basically?
You know, and I asked them when we first started, you know, how does this work? And they basically, the process is you pitch some ideas and they'll zero in on one, and then you send the outline and get a round of revisions on that, and then you do the script. And so that was pretty straightforward. That's how I think most
So Microsoft Word or Final Draft or whatever?
No, just text. Yeah, they were actually really, like, I was
lax.
Shocked. Yeah, very. Like, they were kind of just like, well, this is where, continuity-wise, this is what the characters are doing, but have at it, just whatever. So, you know, I came up with some, like, zany ideas for them, and we ended up going with a story about... Plant Man, I believe is his name, which is some obscure villain that I found. And so in the story, he makes these trees come to life and they kind of terrorize Central Park. But yeah, they were really like, yeah, really lax about everything. I was expecting heavy notes and they kind of just loved everything. So it was a really, it was just a fun process.
And it's a cool team up because, I mean, it's a unique character that is sort of a sidekick, I guess, of Squirrel Girl. And then you got Rocket Raccoon, huge character.
And I was sort of shocked when I first got the email because talking animals is my jam. And I don't think it comes out clearly in my work necessarily. There are a lot of animals on my portfolio, but I really haven't told many talking animal stories, but that is my zone. And so when she sent that to me, I was just like, oh, it's like she knows me.
That's great. So I had a text a couple of days ago where my friend sent me a text that said, hey, did you hear about Calista Brill? And I said, what did I or miss some news? Because I follow publishers weekly. I'm pretty, you know, up on the news that's happening in graphic novels and publishing. And he's like, she's doing a graphic novel with this woman named Neela Magruder. And I was like, what? At first second, is she editing it? And he's like, no, it's another play. And I was like, no way, I'm interviewing her. And he was just like blown away. How did this happen? How did you get connected with Calista Brill? I really respect her because first second comics, I mean, the graphic novels are fantastic. Their subject matter and their stories.
Yeah.
So,
she emailed me last August. I think it was. And she was writing this graphic novel about horseback riding and was looking for an artist that could draw both people and animals. And so one of her friends referred her to me. And so she emailed me and, you know, said, hey, I got your name from someone else. I have this pitch I'd like to show you. Would you be interested in talking about it? And the pitch was Creaky Acres, and it's about a 10-year-old black girl who lives in this kind of fancy suburb, and she rides horses at this fancy hunt club, and then her and her parents move away for work, and they move to this rural, this small country town that's predominantly white, and so it's about her adjusting to this new environment that she's not used to. And so I read the pitch and loved it. I was a kid that grew up in the country in a predominantly white community, and I rode horses for a little bit. And, you know, I looked at this pitch and was like, I know who this kid is. And I thought a lot about it. Like, I talked to Calista on the phone, and we hit it off right away. Like, it was like talking to an old friend. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, like, my barometer for taking a project or passing on it has become, can I stand the thought of anyone else working on this? And I really didn't want anyone else to touch this story because it felt so personal to me. And so, you know, I said, hey, let's do this. And so, yeah, so we developed a pitch, and it was bought very recently by Dial Books for Young Readers, which is an imprint of Penguin.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was looking at Dial Books, and then I saw, wow, this is an imprint of Penguin.
Yeah.
So that's pretty wild. It's a big, big publisher. So a lot of things, their distribution is huge. So I'm sure it's going to get out there.
Yeah, we're very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So one of the questions that I got from the submissions at Society of Illustrators was, how did you strategize a 3-book series proposal? Was it something, it seems like Calista and you kind of came up with that together? Was it something she had planned? Oh, I have 3 books that I wanted to do. What was the...
We originally pitched it as a standalone.
Okay.
And so sometimes when editors at publishing houses are considering making an offer, mm-hmm. what they'll do just to sweeten the deal is, you know, they'll propose. And I think we might have pitched it. I can't remember what the full proposal language was, but I think we might have said, you know, series potential. But what an editor will sometimes do is just, you know, offer to make it a larger deal, so a 2-book deal or a 3-book deal, and that's pretty much what happened.
So the literary agents were involved as well.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Basically. Once the pitch is done, the agents are the ones who send it out. They'll come up with a submission list of editors that they know who are looking for this sort of thing, and they'll send it out. And they kind of do all the heavy lifting there. So we, as the creators, don't really interact with the editors. It's the agents who talk to them, and they negotiate the deal. And so they'll come back to us periodically and say, you know, this is what the editors are offering. This is what we're pushing back on. You know, these are the rights that we want to negotiate, that sort of thing.
So with all this in terms of the workload, Lily is asking, how do you manage your time? You have MFK. You've got probably another children's book coming up soon, right?
Eventually.
And you've got Tangled, which is in production.
Yes.
It's like full steam ahead, right?
Yes.
And you've got this graphic novel. How are you managing your time? How do you balance your day job, your life course, and freelance book projects? That's what she was asking.
It is hard. What I got really good at when I first started MFK, and this kind of took a while, is understanding my limitations.
You get 4 hours of sleep?
I actually get 7. I probably do a little too good. I could stand to sleep less. But basically, now that I've done it so long, I understand when my energy is at its peak and when it starts to lag. So I know, like, during what hours I kind of have trouble. Like, when I first get home, I'm usually, like, dead. I just want to crawl in bed and go to sleep. But I also know that I usually get a second wind around 9 or 10 p.m. So I know, like, if I can just hold out till then I can get a good 2 or 3 hours of work once my second wind comes back. But this is something you figure out, like, kind of through trial and error and through struggle. I have to be pretty consistent. So I know when I get home from work, and thankfully I've had a series of jobs that are pretty consistent schedule-wise. Like, there's not a ton of overtime. And so I know when I get home from work, I eat dinner. I'm usually ready to sit down and go at the computer around 8:30 or 9 o'clock, and then I have about 4 hours that I can work with, which is pretty good. I know now that if I'm slacking, if I start thumbnailing MFK on Thursday, I can get it all done by Sunday night. So I really only need like 2 evenings and 2 days to get a comic page done. And
that's sort of because the speed that you built up probably too, right?
Right, exactly. So. Yeah, and, you know, knowing the workflow, I don't go out a whole lot, because even saying yes to dinner can just take an entire night away from me. So I stay home a lot. I don't socialize terribly much. But really, you know, it's about setting a schedule and sticking to it and knowing your limitations, knowing, you know, how long you can work, like, uninterrupted.
So you'll like finish maybe 12 or 1, and then
I'll go to bed.
You'll crash out.
Yeah. Or I'll read a bit, but usually I just go to bed. You know, like, knowing when you're going to take breaks. So knowing you can work for 2 or 3 hours and then get up, walk around, have something to eat, have snacks. Like, a lot of the time, if I don't eat, you know, that takes energy from me. Or, Yeah, basically that. If I don't eat, so, you know, just eating regularly keeps me going. Having a plan for meals so I don't have to go out, you know, I don't have to cook for very long. Just, you know, setting a schedule, being organized really helps. Creating lists. I love Google Calendar for keeping track of deadlines.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, I try to give myself as much time as possible. Like, whatever, you know, when I have freelance, if we're, you know, they'll tell me what needs to be done, and I'll usually try to bake in a little more time. You know, I know how much time it takes me to get something done, and so I'll plan for maybe a few days extra just in case something comes up. And so...
So do you take a day off to kind of like, okay, let me recharge, or is it like you put in part-time, or what does your schedule look like from Monday through Friday? Is it sort of what you just mentioned?
Okay, so taking into account that I've kind of been slacking lately.
It's the holidays.
Yes.
Give yourself some grace, right?
Yes. So typically, so Monday to Wednesday, that's usually like planning time for MFK. That's, you know, working on upcoming pages or like sketching characters and
thumbnails
stuff.
Yeah,
right. You know, Wednesday night or Thursday night is when I start thumbnailing.
And you're doing this digitally, or are you drawing and then scanning work in?
I like to sketch in my sketchbook. I like a pencil. Yeah,
I started using Procreate to do some of my thumbnails, and then actually bring them into Clip Studio or Clip Paint Studio, or what was Manga Studio.
I love using my sketchbook for sketching. It's freer.
And it helps you get away from that dreaded blue light,
right? Exactly.
You can take some time to breathe.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Monday, I think, if I'm going to take a break during the week, it's going to be Monday, because I just updated MFK on Sunday night, and so Monday, if I take a break, that's going to be my recharge day. So then Tuesday is when I start rolling. I try to be prepped with thumbnails by Thursday night. Then Friday, sometimes I kind of slack depending. Fridays, like Thursday, I'll try to get 4 hours in. Fridays, I might get 2 or 3 hours. Saturday and Sunday are the big days for me. I stay home and I work, and I know by Saturday night I need to have the inking done, hopefully flats done too, and then by Sunday night I need a page finished. It gets tricky if I've got freelance to worm in, or if I've got another deadline somewhere, then I kind of just, I have to work it in somewhere during the week, or I'll get up a little earlier on the weekend so I can get in a few more hours.
And you have deadlines for the Insight graphic novel of MFK, right?
Those files have already been sent. So it's, everything's kind of on their end now. Like, they'll send me.
So you're ahead of your schedule.
Yeah, but so, I have to work on the next book.
Yeah, then Creaky Acres will start.
Yes, soon. That's going to be rough, but but. Again, I know how long it takes me to get a page done, and I've been thinking a lot about my workflow. Like,
so
I think
specifically a page penciling, inking, and coloring takes how long for you? That's another question that.
Okay, so coloring takes about 10 hours, depending. Inking used to take one. Now it takes 2 to 3 because I've started using Manga Studio inking, and I've gotten really precious about it. I'm trying to stop doing that. Penciling and thumbnailing are far faster. So it ends up being about 15, 16 hours in a week for one page.
So now the output has to be faster. Increased.
Yeah.
So now you either... you're going to take part of the process. Do you see yourself not doing the coloring, or do you still want to kind of keep it all in-house?
No, I'm definitely at a point where I need to start delegating to get anything done. And so I'm already I'm thinking about what sort of help I need with MFK and what help I'll need with Creaky Acres.
And you already have a good sense of the art direction since you've been doing MFK for 5 years now?
Yes.
Pretty amazing. So with Creaky Acres, you'll probably do some sample pages and then probably farm it out,
yes,
possibly, and just focus line art and composition and visual storytelling, right?
Exactly. And I'm also thinking, you know, MFK is pretty detailed. Comics don't need to be that detailed, so I think I might start cutting back just a little bit.
Here's another question. How did the two literary agents work together, each representing the writer and illustrator? Actually, we already talked about that because one represents...
Oh. Actually, no. I think that's a slightly different conversation. It sounds like it's about my agent versus Callista's agent.
Okay.
And how they work together.
Yeah, the writer and the illustrator for Creaky Acres.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good question because I was never on those calls. But from what I gather, like they've had a lot of conversations. And so basically, like, my agent knows what rights and everything I want to keep. She knows what she wants to get for me. And then Callista's agent knows what terms she wants to get for her. And so basically, they kind of need to come together on agreement on those things. And then we need to agree with whatever, you know, they come up with together. So typically, you know, they'll have a conversation. They talk about the submission list to start with. And so my agent would bring what editor she wants to submit to. And then Callista's agent will bring her editors. And so they'll come up with a submission list based on that. And so once the offers started coming in, you know, then they'd discuss again. Well, the editors would send their offers to both agents, and so they would discuss, okay, what do we want? What do we need to negotiate? And then they'd bring that to us, you know, here's what we're pushing for. And, you know, as long as we didn't have any questions or concerns, they would send those as, you know, as a team back to the publishers. And so, you know, basically they work together to get us the best offer.
So here's another question. Does Callista provide a lot of visual reference in her script or early discussions with the world-building designs? Is it collaboration with the art direction, or does Nyla art direct the world herself with no input from Callista?
I haven't looked at the script in a very long time, and so I'm trying to remember how much art direction was in the script itself. The basic answer is no, she hasn't provided a lot of art direction. Basically, like, she provides, like, very basic descriptions of the characters. But basically it was kind of up to me to come up with the designs.
Model sheets of sorts,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so I would send her sketches and then, like, refined art, and she'd okay it or not. When we were working on the comic pages, she gave some feedback about the overall look and, you know, the color treatment. But yeah, that's about it.
What is your collaboration like, knowing that Callista is also an editor at First Second?
Well, shockingly, I'm not intimidated at all because she's just so wonderful. She's so easy to talk to.
Yeah, you guys got along pretty well when you first connected.
Yeah, she's great. But Callista, you know, Callista having that background is so great because she knows so much about the comics market and, you know, like, just she has that editor's eye. And so, you know, I can trust her to give me feedback when, you know, when it's needed, to give me a second perspective when I need it. But so far, you know, things have been very, very easy, I think. You know, she's a great writer. She likes my art. So, you know, it's been a very easygoing relationship.
That's great. So where do you see yourself in 5 years in terms of all of these different media? You have graphic novels, you have storyboarding, you have picture books. Do you see yourself venturing into other territories, or do you want to stay with these three, or do you want to slowly segment into just graphic novels, or where do you see yourself going?
By then, I'd like to be making books full time. I think I'd like to step away from animation as a full time job. And so I'm hoping in 5 years I'll be able to just go back to full time freelance and focus on my books, take the occasional freelance project, hopefully be opened up to take other like comic projects.
And who knows, MFK might be made into an animated series, right?
That'd be amazing.
You never know, right? And Creaky Acres, man, that sounds like a film, right? I think it could be a possible film.
That would also be amazing.
Yeah. So your love of animation has always been there, but your love of books has probably started earlier, right? Because of your connection to children's books.
Mm-hmm.
Do you plan to just become more of a author illustrator versus like working for somebody else where somebody says, well, I have this great story, and if it is a great story, would you want to illustrate it? Or at one point would you want to say, well, I'm doing my own work, I have a lot of stories to tell?
Yeah, as far as illustrating, I want to get back to focusing on my own work at a point. I'm doing Creaky Acres because I just love it so much. And
yeah, it's great.
If another project comes up that I love just as much, yeah, I'll consider it. But I know I'm in MFK for the long haul. I want that to be more of a priority at some point for me. Like, as far as comics go, I know I've got MFK. But yeah, for the most part, I see myself focusing on my own projects in the future.
So what advice do you have to give to people who want to do their own graphic novel and have to make a living but want to do art as their career? Because we all know that graphic novels and even children's books, it's very difficult to make a living in the beginning.
Yes.
It takes quite a bit of a time. So,
right. Well, I mean, I'd give the advice that was given me, have stamina. You know, it's arts aren't easy. It takes a lot of time to build a body of work. It takes a long time to build a following, to build a readership. So figure out what you're passionate about and let that be your driving factor. You know, don't go into a story or a project because you think it's going to be popular. Do it because you love it, because you might be stuck with it for the next 5 or 10 years.
Awesome. That's so great. Well, thank you for your time with us, Nyla. I really appreciate you coming down to do this podcast, and wish you the best of luck on Creaky Acres and MFK and your next children's book, and also your work at Disney Storyboarding.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. We hope to bring you more exciting podcast interviews every month. In the meantime, folks, if you like the podcast, please rate us on iTunes. That would help us greatly. And if you are interested in becoming a member of the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles, you can go to www.si-la.org. It's a great opportunity to connect, get into community, and learn to spread your wings as a creator. So come by and visit us at our physical location in Eagle Rock at the Pop Secret Gallery, 5119 Eagle Rock Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90041. Hope to see you guys soon. Expect some exciting podcasts coming.